All right. So, hello everyone. My name is Tyler. For those who don't know me, I am living on the south kind of west end of Vancouver Island, an unceded territory of the T'Souk Nation people. And we have been kind of hanging out with Brightway Zen for a few years now. Domio is away on retreat, a Rohatsu. Rather for the next little while. So she asked if anyone wanted to volunteer, and I was so lucky to get the gig for tonight. So we're gonna continue on discussing bits and pieces from the okay, you're blurring. Sorry. From the book The Intimate Way of Zen by James Ishmael Ford, which we've been going through for the last few weeks here. Yeah, and so I kind of was intrigued by some things that happened that I read rather in chapter 18. And that's part of the ox herding picture number 5. And as James Ford kind of explains that picture, we've talked already about this picture, but as Ford kind of talks about as in the ox picture number 5, I should have had a picture set up to show you. I'm not going to try to show it from my book because clearly my blurring the background of my bedroom, my messy bedroom, is gonna mess that up. But in this picture, we've had a glimpse of the ox. There it is. John's got it set up there. So we've had a glimpse of the ox, and maybe we've even had a chance to. I think he says pat the ox. That was fine. But we've interacted with this ox at least in a little bit. And so what I think I was going to start focusing on for the conversation tonight, and I don't have a ton to say myself. It will rely on some breakout rooms and some conversation. But the first thing is when on page 157, Ford says, those who have studied the matter, oh, sorry. So those who have studied the matter around money and its importance towards happiness. So, in money cultures, there is a saturation point in which more money doesn't make things better. So it's a bit of a moving target, but there is a situation where, the more money you have, the more happiness that brings. So dollar for dollar, as you make more money, it gets, your level of happiness goes up. But there is at a point, it kind of hits this sort of diminishing returns situation where the more money you're making is not increasing your happiness anymore. In fact, one might say it really starts to level off. And this is something that people have studied, I think, for a while. Yeah, I think we call like the not it's not a law, but the theory of sort of diminishing return on happiness. And so this makes sense for money. But what we kind of start talking about in this chapter off and on here is that where else in our life does this sort of pursuit of something that we think will make us happy is making us happy, but then the continual pursuit for more, 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 and this sort of declining, this the declining return of that happiness, and this sort of this urge we have to always kind of push for something different, something more, in order to be kind of getting something back for ourselves. And so I wanted to start with a discussion about in our own lives, when have we run into a situation where we're striving towards something that we think we're doing so that we can increase our happiness? If I just get this, then whew, that'll be it. Then I'll be happy. And then we get there and we're like, oh, like that's not quite it. Keep going more, whether it's promotions in a job or like I'm thinking, things like that. So when in your life have you experienced diminishing returns on happiness? And how might our practice in Zen help us deal in those situations? So we're going to go into breakout rooms. I'm not sure how many people have joined us now, but like three or four. You guys can take a second while the breakout rooms are getting set up, and then you guys in the dirt can break yourselves off. Anyway, obviously be as open or as closed as you want about personal experiences, But the discussion around like what parts of our life keep us kind of pushing for more, 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 even though the return may not be giving us back sort of what it did earlier on. And then what sort of part of your Zen practice do you think could turn out to be helpful in sort of dealing with this sort of striving? Does that make sense? Sure. Regardless, we're doing it. So, but if anyone has just sorry. If anyone has any questions, please ask any clarification. Otherwise, we'll break off into breakout rooms for I'll end them when it's like 5, 10 minutes to discuss. And maybe we'll discuss when we get back, have a little chat, see how it goes from there. That sound good? Again, we're doing it anyway, so all right. All right. I think we're just waiting for everyone to get back to the in the dirt zendo. I tried to give them a warning. I don't know if they can hear me though. They may have muted me. So we'll see if they can.
You just kind of like wave your arms.
Yeah, it was sort of like I guess they can. I don't have anyone to text in there either. No one do I have any there. Coral. No. Oh, here they, I think that looks positive. No. No. Always fun when it gives me an opportunity to do some editing with the with the video recording too, so that's good. Keep my skills going. Someone's in the chat. All right, looks like they're starting to come on back. So, yeah, I thought if I'd be kind of curious to see, oh, right, they're not, there we are. Let me just open me up. Is the dirt, can the dirt sender hear me again now? All right. Yeah, so I'm curious if anything of interest or any insights came up in your conversations that anyone wanted to share back about any. If you're in the dirt, feel free just to go right up to the chair and we'll. All right, this group's dying to get out of here early. All right.
Okay. Hi, I'm Coral. I would say that the thing that surprised me about my group is that each and everything that was shared in our group was so relatable. I think that there's so many applications to this, and we get ourselves in trouble a lot. I'll just say what mine was, just to start the conversation. My pursuit for health really got in the way there for a while. I was going to the gym a lot. I was restricting my diet to the point where I was like fainting in public places, and I was no longer a healthy person. I was living like a disordered lifestyle. And what, you know, I had to stop. I had to stop at some point. And what Zazen has taught me, you know, and when you stop like doing like really aggressive like health things, your body kind of like does this like whiplash thing. So of course I went through this like really intense period of change with my body and eating and you know what I looked like, because in the end it was just a pursuit of thinness, right? It was just like a societal thing. And what Zazen really helped me with in my practice and having a Sangha is that I'm just so thankful to have a body, you know. And that is just so profound, and it's like brought me to tears, really, that realization. And another thing, and through our like study, you know, the importance of ancestors and stuff, and thinking about that a lot, is that I realized that I look like my mom. And I think a younger me would have been like really just like, oh my God, about that. But I love it now. It feels so good. I just like that sense of comfort I get from, you know, like a child looking at their mother, and like that's what I look now look like now, and I really love that, and it's really important to me.
Thank you. All right, great center.
Thanks, Tyler. Yeah, what came up for me was like currently I've been actually really struggling, feeling like life is getting in the way of my Zen practice, and like trying to figure out a way to like minimize the distractions, and like even to the effect of like changing careers or so. Anyways, it's just interesting, the whole topic of money came up, so. But I also had to kind of put myself into check and realize that I have to figure out a way to bring my practice into all of that, like the busyness of work and but these other things that I feel like are interfering. So that's all I got.
Okay. Well, what we can do is we can keep on keeping on, and then if anyone is sorry, I'm stuck on the blank screen here. I was gonna move there. If anyone has anything that suddenly comes up they want to add, don't hesitate to raise your hand. So when Ford is talking about this in the book, and he tells an old koan or an old story anyways, it says when you're talking about being happy, when they say, I should just find the actual quote, but when it's cold, be a cold Buddha, and when it's hot, be a hot Buddha. Or he has one about let the cold kill you when it's cold, let the hot kill you when it's hot, which I thought was an interesting interpretation of this. Or kill the Buddha. I don't know exactly where the quote is, but but it's about, acceptance of where you're at, right? And this sort of like this is sort of but that's sort of the primary lesson of a lot of what we try to learn here. So it's a big thing to just sort of do, right? Like that's sort of so we've got lots of things in Zen that can help us out. But it's also we're also what we'll get into a little bit now is sort of the culture that we're in can make that a little difficult. So but we're going to bring it back to the ox herding picture for a second. So in the picture that was held up there, we've seen a glimpse of the ox, and they maybe we've even had a chance to touch the ox. And so these are big moments, right? These are moments of our practice where like something we've had a breakthrough. What Domio might call or has called in our podcast like enlightenments, right? So people have these moments of not enlightenment where like it's all there, but moments, these breakthroughs in our practice, and you often hear people talking about their breakthroughs. But this is a double-edged sword. Breakthroughs are, I think, are probably wonderful for our practice. I think they're just something that happens, but they come with another side, right? And we've talked about this before. But as much as Buddhism may prepare us to deal with desire in our life, there are things we can use to kind of help us in our life. It's also priming us in some ways, if we're not careful, to fall into this trap of wanting more, right? I don't know a lot about other religions. I was not raised a particular religious person, but Buddhism seems or Zen or Buddhism, whatever, seems unique in many way in this way, that there's something in theory, we talk about this, about what this really means, but there's something in theory like that we can attain during this life, right? There is enlightenment. There are people who are on a path, and that means like some people apparently are further along a path, or this is how it can be perceived or presented. And I don't know that a lot of other religions are like that. Like I think I know a little bit. My partner was Catholic for a little while, and well, for a lot of her life actually. But she, they there's they've got their rules. They're supposed to be good or whatever. If they're not, they go and they apologize for it. I'm really simplifying Catholicism right now, but then the end thing the goal or whatever, the reward is heaven, right? And that's, but that's something that happens somewhere else. It's not something that happens, I know heaven is a place on earth, but that's, it is something that happens. Sorry, couldn't let that, it got stuck in my head as soon as I said it. Not sure I went there. Anyway, it's something that happens somewhere else. Whereas in Zen and in Buddhism, technically, and we talk a lot about how what this actually means, like we're trying to do something now. Enlightenment is something that can happen now, which adds this layer of wanting to achieve something. We talk a lot of our talks are about how don't Zazen is Zen isn't something we're trying to achieve. Or there's all these little quotes about it that are falling out of my head right now that I can't think of, but in so I'll put a pin in that. So there's that going on. Now there's this my partner and I work in education, and there's an educational philosopher. Many of you may have heard his name, John Dewey. And he talks about how our educational system is set up in a way that you go to preschool, and preschool is to prepare you for regular school. Then you go to regular school, and regular school is supposed to prepare you for high school, and high school is supposed to prepare you this. That's supposed to prepare you for a job. Your job's supposed to prepare you for your career, and then career for retirement. And in retirement, you're preparing for death, right? And like this is what we do in our culture. But he said, what we need to reconsider it as is that like when you're in preschool, you are not preparing for something else, but you are just immersed in what it is to be in preschool. And if you actually read a lot of Dewey, it turns out, he's actually was quite influenced by Zen Buddhism, and this sort of like how you're learning in this moment. And everything in my partner and I talk about these days is education, because we're both sort of are studying, we're working in anyways. But it's this sort of thing, it's not hard to see, is similar to capitalism, right? So our capitalist system is always pushing us, our culture that we're in, even those of us, even any of us who might feel like, I push back against capitalism, I try to engage with it critically. The culture, regardless that we're in, has sort of prepared us to like feel like success is a really specific thing, and like moving forward is a really specific thing. And this people suggest this intensifies even more in late capitalism, which I don't want to be a downer too much and get into late capitalism, but that might be where we're at these days. And so this sort of like intensity and this desire of these feelings when in late capitalism intensify for us. So back to the Oxfording picture again, we can see how if we take it and understand it with a cultural understanding in how we're engaging with this, whether consciously or unconsciously, whether we're trying to resist it or not, we have this sort of baked into our system that there is something we are trying to achieve. There is a process that we're trying to get through. So we have this moment with the Enlightenment. We see the ox, and this is amazing. This is great. And then the ox disappears. And maybe we're disappointed about that. Maybe we're then we get busy. We start trying to find that ox again, find that ox again, find that ox again. And we don't, or we can't. The more we try, the more we seem to not be able to get there. And so we start getting down on our practice, or we start getting down on sort of our, or we get that point where we can kind of, we see the ox in the different, in the distance. Maybe the ox saunters into the forest, and then we're doing it again. Yep, we see the ox again. They saunter into the forest. And this just keeps happening, and yeah, that's kind of boring now, right? Like I've hit that level, and I'm not, it's not that I want more, but just like for some reason I'm no longer excited about this sort of sighting. I've seen the ox enough times. I've seen his butt walk into the forest, seen its butt. I don't want to gender the ox, it could be anyone. And so, but this is what I think, the excitement for it, the interest in it fades. And so it's no longer good enough just to see it. We need to, we start desiring for more and more and more. And this is interesting to me because I when you read the stuff we read, there is some talk about like don't have any like mind for gaining anything. But I'm curious what that might have meant, what you guys think that might have meant for when it was written in a culture where capitalistic progress wasn't a thing, right? Like that wasn't how people considered success. That wasn't a, like progress wasn't built in this way or sort of built. So when they imagined this path towards enlightenment, how did, you know, did they view it like from a just completely different way that didn't create this sort of yearning, or at least not in the same way that we do? And I wonder what sort of context was sort of built into to that when they were first sort of discussing Buddhism. So, or sorry, when they're first when they're not when they're first discussing Buddhism, like when they're practicing Buddhism prior to kind of a capitalist culture, with that in mind. And so we're going to turn the question on its head now. So instead of what, when in your life have you experienced this yearning for more, and Zen has been a tool or a, your practice of Zen has been able to help you with it. Let's flip that around and say, when in your practice of Zen have you found yourself dissatisfied and wanting more from it? So when has this sort of been the op the problem not in our life with Zen being the tool, but when have you found yourself falling into that trap, or have you? Sort of thing. So again, we'll take a few minutes to just have this conversation again. You can be as open as you want to be. You know, I think that so for an example, that would probably be for a lot for some of us who have, when we go to our first session, right? And we go to our first session, and like you have this great experience, and I'm gonna try to stay up as late as I can because I'm gonna you know, just like really like embody this. And then it was this, even if your session got shut down early because of a snowstorm, it was still a beautiful experience. And you go home and you're ready just to keep that going. But that sort of something about it, the spice change, whatever happens, that desire sort of starts fading, and you're not practicing as hard as you were during session, or you know, the dopamine just sort of ain't there anymore, and you know, you're not quite getting the same thing out of it. So discussions about just experiences like that in your practice. Not necessarily with any answer on how to deal with it in mind, but just sort of, yeah, a chance to chat with your Sangha mates about your practice and in that sort of regard. Does that make sense? All right. One more time to the breakout rooms. These same groups, you can mix them up if you want, Paul. All right, so before we get started with the chat back, I think I may have forgotten to record that middle section of the talk. So if you're listening to this on the talk and boom, you have no idea what's going on. We just came back from a second set of breakout rooms where people were discussing moments in their Zen practice where they may have had moments of progress, for lack of a better term. We often have discussions on what all this really means, but moments where they might see, you know, move along the path, and then or other moments where they've just had feelings of desire and sort of what that's brought up in their practice, and people went off to breakout rooms to chat about it, and now we are back. And if anyone has any thoughts, anything you guys chatted about that seemed of interest, any yeah, it doesn't have to be like, you don't necessarily have to share their experiences of desire and their spiritual path, but if there's anything that came up that seemed interesting to chat about, I'm sure we would love to hear about it.
I'm Jen. We talked about in our group the way Dogen really emphasizes that practice is enlightenment, and so there is nothing to attain. But on the other hand, we do see that there's so far you can go in your study and your practice that it can be overwhelming to see all the different levels of classes and groups that you can participate in and sesshin that you can go to. And so it's clear that well, and you know, people who become teachers have had transmission, and that's different than those of us who just come and sit. So it's kind of like it can be seeming like there are things to attain, even though it seems like you do have to keep just putting that aside and sit and experience enlightenment one day at a time.
Thank you. I won't just necessarily try to comment on everyone's comments. So I'll just I'll let that sit. Thank you. Yeah, AJ.
Yeah, so I've only been practicing Zen for a couple of months now, and so everything is new to me, right? And so very often I'll be reading something or we'll be sitting in a talk here and something is illuminating or insightful, pretty much every single time because I haven't heard it before, and it's exciting and it's fun, right? And that I also know that feeling doesn't last forever, right? And that's the whole point of practice. But for me, something I've really been focusing on is patience and like being okay with being uncomfortable. And both of those are really like I'm a very kind of a control freak, like having a checklist and just knock everything off my list constantly, right? If Buddhism was as easy as, memorize these 15 sutras and log 1,000 hours, sitting in zazen, boom, like I could do that all day long. But that's not how life works. And so being okay with being a beginner and being okay with being uncomfortable and just being patient and kind of trusting the process for me is kind of what I'm focusing on and being okay with not really being comfortable with doing that. It's discomfort. Sometimes sitting zazen is not comfortable physically, and that's okay too, right? And like just be okay with that. And that's good practice for life because life isn't always comfortable and just like all of these little things. And that's kind of what I'm focusing on now. And it's not really what you were talking about, but for me that's what I was sharing, in our group. And for me, that's what I've been focusing on in my practice.
Thank you. Any other similar themes come up in anyone else's talks? I was thinking the practice is enlightenment piece that, we're not supposed to strive, and yet there's all these sort of things feels that we feel like we should be striving towards. This feels like a very Zen thing to tell us. And try to find that sort of that space. Yeah, and I think someone mentioned the cult, there are all sorts of offerings here where it's, there's the practice intensive group, there's the fall practice group and the sprinters group, and there's the meta group that work, that meets before on Sunday and then joins in on Sunday afternoon. And there's all these opportunities for you to feel like you're missing out, or you're not doing enough, or that or just like, yeah, just like, oh, I would like to do that, but I also have to exist in my life. I'll if everyone doesn't have no one's sort of chomping at the bit, I'll end with the last little thing that I liked that Ford ends this chapter with. And I like it because, so as many I have probably talked about far too much. So I run a preschool, and often enough, every day, we're doing things and someone's bored. And they're like, I'm bored, or this is boring, or I don't want, it doesn't, it, and I'm always like, great. And they're like, what? And I'm like, boredom's perfect. That's what I'm, when you're bored, that's a great sign. That means you're ready to like, something new is coming your way. You're going to be able to figure something out, and figuring out what to, or just being bored is a great experience. So this last sort of thing that Ford wraps up this chapter with, he says, remember, the desire for novelty is as natural can be. And I like that because sometimes we can be hard on ourselves if we have this drive for new and natural things. It is, at some point it is harm, but at some point it is harmful to the spiritual life. So enjoy that cup of coffee or tea fully, and when you're finished the drink, put it down. Be wary of the temptations for a second or third cup. Notice, be aware, meet that mystery, even when it's boring, especially when it's boring. We'll end with that. We offer the merits of this class discussion to all. Is that how we end this one? So, yeah, so they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita. Good night, everyone.